Get deeper insights on the news from inside sources.
We're going to stay with the question just a little bit longer as it relates to some of the foreign aid and defense packages that are working their way, hopefully, onto the floor of the House of Representatives. Of course, Speaker Mike Johnson made the announcement late last night that he would do a series of four pieces of legislation. One for Israel, one for Ukraine, one dealing with Taiwan, and then there's the humanitarian portion dealing with Gaza and some other humanitarian efforts around the world, and that these would be open to some debate and some amendment process. And so we'll see how that continues to play out. But we want to dig into what we're really digesting now in terms of some of the not surprising, somewhat eerie connection points between what's happening in Israel, what Iran is doing and engaging in, and what's happening with Russia and their continued assault on Ukraine. And to help us break all of that down, of course, we always look to Army Colonel retired Jonathan Sweet, served over 30 years as a military intelligence officer, a good friend of the show, a great thinker in all of this. And welcome back to the program.
Hey, Boyd, thanks for bringing me back. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. So as one of the things that just has been very stunning to me is when you looked at this attack by Iran, the massive swarm of drones followed by the missiles and the longer range missiles. We've seen this somewhere before. It's an area you've been following quite closely in terms of what Russia has been doing every day going into Ukraine. Give us a sense of compare and contrast those strategies and what you're seeing, what you're sensing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, exactly. 300 plus cruise missiles, ballistic missiles and drones thrust upon Israel in a 4 to 5 hour period. And it was in layers, too. It was drones, it was cruise missiles, it was ballistic. It was all timed sequentially to try to provide an overwhelming type of assault on Israel. The Israel's multi-layered defense obviously performed superbly. The interdiction rate was 99%, which is incredible. But multi-layers, they were attacking, ballistic missiles in the atmosphere. They were attacking cruise missiles, obviously, in the air. They're going after drones. They were getting after it with different weapon systems, the Iron Dome, the David Sling. You saw jet fighters from three different countries that were involved shooting down weapon systems. And integrated air defense has dealt with that massive attack. Ukraine simply doesn't have that. I mean, Ukraine is limited to two or three different weapon systems, and they just don't have the ammunition to save off all the rounds that Russia's overwhelming them with.
Yeah, and so as you look at that, it's to me, it's just ironic that that Iran would use that kind of swarm strategy. And at the same time, Iran is providing a lot of the elements so that Russia can use that same kind of swarm strategy against Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely. And quite frankly, it could overwhelm Ukraine. Look, I mean, Ukraine has weapon systems, but they're now running significantly short on supply of missiles. And the Patriot missile, for example, itself is a $4 million missile. The individual weapon is a $4 million missile, and they're going to use that against hypersonic missiles. They're relying upon smaller systems, Black Hawks, Stingers, Avengers, and in some cases, machine gun fire to shoot the drones down that are coming at them. But it's the volume. It's everything that Russia always do. It's mass artillery, mass air, mass infantry. That's their tactic, and they're going to continue to use it. And until Ukraine is provided some additional support, they're going to suffer the consequences. Right now, that's their energy structure, infrastructure. But it's also, the last couple months, Russia has hit Kharkiv hard, indicating that Kharkiv is the next ground target that they may be considering in the spring.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting. I think one of the things that Iran miscalculated was that maybe Israel wasn't as isolated as they thought, that the U.S., the U.K., France, Jordan, Saudi Arabia all came running in support. So I think they underestimated that. And yet, when you look to Ukraine, it sure feels like they're kind of standing on their own. And that has to give Vladimir Putin confidence to just keep going at will.
Oh, it certainly does. Ukraine obviously is increasingly isolated, even though the European countries are stepping up, with seven security agreements with seven different nations. Poland and Romania are waiting to sign their agreements. Artillery's coming. And as you said earlier in your segment, you have the Ukraine funding package in Congress. But the lag time from approval to the time which those weapon systems arrive on the battlefield could be weeks or months. So, yeah, they are feeling increasingly isolated, and that does give Putin a window of opportunity. So I suspect you'll probably see more and heavier because he's trying to attrit and degrade confidence and morale within the Ukrainian ranks, but also within the civilian structures.
Yeah, and describe for us just a little bit in terms of, one, how Ukraine is keeping all that together from a military standpoint. And then the longer that goes, where there does start to feel like this inevitability, what that does both inside of Ukraine, but then you have to look at other allies around the world, have to be wondering, is the U.S. going to be with them when we say we will?
Absolutely. That's obviously the biggest, from my perspective, national security issue for the United States is losing that confidence in your allies that, one, you're going to sign that agreement, but will you be there when I need you? And will you stay with me to the very end, or will you cut and run? It just increasingly, it looks as though increasingly that this administration has a strategy, quite frankly, that is react, defend, contain, and cut and run. You've seen that in Afghanistan. You've seen that in the Sudan. And we're starting to see that, obviously, in Ukraine, but also within Israel, too. Look, the President of the United States just told Prime Minister Netanyahu that we're not going to support an offensive strike against Iran with nothing. It's not like they're going to not provide weapons. They're not going to provide air refuelers. They're not going to provide intelligence. They're not going to provide weapon systems. That's a strong message. And you got to sit back and wonder, am I next? What does Taiwan think? You know, what does the Eastern European countries there in NATO, how are they perceiving this? So, no, it does do a lot of harm to the United States that we, for the last 6 months almost, have been virtually absent without leave.
Yeah, and give me a sense of what you're watching for in the days ahead, both inside of Ukraine in terms of their ability to continue to hold the line and in terms of Israel and what they choose to do or not do moving forward.
Yeah, so within Ukraine, I think you're going to continue to see this mobile defense that they've established within the Donbas. And it's very effective. I mean, they're seeding terrain, don't get me wrong. But on the score and the level of Russian soldiers that they're killing each day, estimated by the British intelligence to be about 750 to 1,000 a day, not to mention the number of tanks and artillery and BMPs. So for them, the close fight is the fight, in addition to some of the deeper strikes that they're doing against oil refineries, trying to stop, if you will, the funding of the Russian war. What they're missing, obviously, is the ability to interdict, the ability to stop the forces before they arrive in Ukraine, as opposed to actually fighting them from the foxhole. So that's one. So in Iran, I think, or in Israel, I think what you're going to see within the next, you know, week probably is Iran's looking really hard at what they're going to target. The most immediate threat to Iran right now is the IRGC. Mm. And they have gone after IRGC leadership throughout December, and they hit them in Syria, in Damascus, Syria, and are also recently obviously blew up the consulate, but that's a threat. So I suspect you may see IRGC formations, bases, ammunition storage facilities. I think you're going to see them going after their ability to fund their war, so you see oil platforms and pipelines. I think you're also going to see them go after the nuclear facilities because that is the most dangerous threat to them. Yeah. And Iran, clearly within the next week, month, 2 months, can produce a nuclear weapon. Now, can they operationalize it? That's a different story, but they can make a nuclear weapon, and that's a threat, and they will go after that. And the last thing they may go after, and this takes up the step on the escalation ladder, the last step is going after actual regime leadership, all within a possible reality. Yep.
Wow. It is a turbulent time, to say the least. This is a time for real leadership, and often that can be unpopular within your own political party. But it's the kind of leaders that we've seen in the past in this country. It's the kind of leadership we've got to have today as well. Retired Army Colonel Jonathan Sweet, as always, love your perspective. Thanks for walking us through and connecting the dots. And I think those dots are fascinating between Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea. We've got to keep our eye on all of that as well. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. Once again, thanks for having me on board. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll step aside for some bottom of the hour news. We come back, more Inside Sources coming up next on KSL News Radio. Stick around.